All right.
That would be my teacher voice. I'm sorry. I would like to call our meeting to order, and I would like to welcome our committee members and our guests. Today is the 29th of November, and I believe that it is 9:33. Jackie, we're ready to do the recording. And Tamara, I would ask for you to take roll, if you would, please.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Representative Hannon?
Present.
Representative Josephson, alternate to Hannon? Representative Prox? Alternate to Representative Johnson? Thank you.
Here.
Representative Johnson? Chair Fancher?
Here.
Member Thomas?
Here.
Member Cook?
Here.
And Member McBath?
Here.
Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
We have a quorum, which means we can conduct business. I would ask as a gentle reminder for people to silence their cell phones. It is a bit distracting when we have something go off. So if you would silence your cell phones, we would all appreciate it. Is there anyone online for this meeting?
If I may, through the chair, I just want to also mention that we do have with us staff Jackie Eagle and ethics consultant Joyce Anderson is here as well.
Thank you so much. Okay, people that are online, we do have some folks that I see online. And do we have anyone signed up to speak on our sign-in sheet over here? We do have folks signed up. I am told that we will take testimony, but first what I would like is I would like an approval of an agenda. We all should have a notebook. I'm looking at tab 21. So if we could have an approval for an agenda, I would appreciate it. Any objection? The motion was made by?
Connor.
Motion made by Connor Thomas. Is there any objection? Hearing none, our agenda is approved. And that brings us to 3, public comment. I would like to note that we have a number of people both online and a few people present that would like to comment. And this is regarding complaint 22-01 and complaint 22-02. Our testimony may be by teleconference teams or in person. We are up against a hard stop at 11:15. It is important to all of us, excuse me, as committee members, that we hear the voices of the public. But in light of the fact that our meeting has to be adjourned by 12:30 because many of us have planes to catch, places to go, I would ask that we limit our comment to the topics at hand. If we could limit that to 3 minutes, that would be great. We have got to stop public comment at 11:15. And so I'm hoping that it doesn't get to that, but that is just, I mean, logistics being logistics, people coming from far away, rooms being reserved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I would ask that if anyone would like to speak about that, is that okay? All right. So, Tamara, anything that we need to talk about before we move on?
Through the chair, no. I believe that you've covered everything and that we do have a hard stop at 11:15 and the room is reserved after 12:30. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. You're welcome. So, without further ado, we do have some members present in the public. Thank you for taking, or in the audience, thank you for taking time to come in. I would like to have the members of the public that would like to speak introduce themselves and come forward. Perfect.
To the left or the right?
Whatever you would prefer. How about the middle?
Good morning, members of the board. I'm Pat Martin, and I believe that you'll see that though I'm not the subject of the complaints against Representatives Kirka and Eastman, I am certainly a prominent figure in those complaints. I'm going to ask your indulgence. I may go over 3 minutes. I believe that there's a lot to consider. with respect to my role in this. Of course, if you need to hold me to 3 minutes, then that's your prerogative. The reason I asked for more than 3 minutes is, you know, there's a little bit of a backstory to all of this that isn't in any of the records. That backstory, of course, goes back to some votes of Representative Kevin McCabe early in April. And, of course, at the time, he was my representative. He was my House representative in Big Lake. Redistricting has changed that, so that's not the case. But there were some votes that that I didn't appreciate either as a constituent or as a representative of an interest group, specifically Alaska Right to Life and also Alaska Gun Rights. And so I spoke to him directly, called his office, sent emails, but also as a leader of interest groups. I did what interest groups do, and I let our constituents that we share, right, my membership, I let them know about the votes, let them know how to contact Representative McCabe in order to show their displeasure for his votes. This is not an uncommon thing to present something like this as some kind of apparent type of behavior of an interest group is really fascinating when you consider that if a Republican conservative legislator were to vote, say, against gun rights, he's certainly going to hear from the NRA. And likewise, if, say, a more liberal Democrat votes against a Planned Parenthood priority, they're going to hear from them as well. This is how interest groups work, and this is part of the political process. However, on April 20th, Representative McCabe took to the House floor, and he used about 3 minutes on the House floor to absolutely decry the fact that constituents and interest groups like Alaska Right to Life and Alaska Gun Rights were holding him accountable for the votes that were inconsistent with his promises and his stated intentions. I have a transcript of that speech that he made on the House floor, and I'm going to read just a couple little quick pieces of that. But in that speech, he thought it was important to define corruption. And he defined corruption as anything that's morally degenerate, perverted, depraved, characterized by improper conduct. Political corruption, he continues, may also come in the form of manipulating policies and abusing a position of authority to increase or maintain an individual's power, status, or wealth. He goes on to characterize the corruption specifically with respect to Alaska Right to Life and Alaska Gun Rights, which means me. Okay? In the last 10 days, as most of you know, I have undergone a series of attacks on social media from Alaska Right to Life and Alaska Gun Rights. These four actions, speaking of the votes that we took to issue, these four actions, I took to table several amendments during our budget discussion.
Mr. Martin, I'm sorry if I may, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
We have reached actually 3 minutes, and it's important that perhaps you may want to speak directly to the complaint so that we can get it to everyone online.
Yeah. This is directly to the complaint. I appreciate it.
If I may again, Madam Chair, also Mr. Martin did have an opportunity to speak to this issue in front of the committee on November, I believe, 18th of 2022. And so some of the information that you may be providing, we may already have, if you'd like to speak directly to the complaint.
Sure. So I'll wrap this one up with this complaint is just a continuation of Mr. McCabe's accusation of political corruption on my part. And when we actually turn to the complaint and what Mr. McCabe wrote in the complaint, he uses a lot of the same language. He actually he says that I'm an unregistered lobbyist, which is an accusation of corruption and illegal behavior. And, of course, he goes on to say that I was there to intimidate staffers, specifically female staffers. And in his accusation, he used the word apparently, and it is unknown. Apparently, I had used Mr. Eastman and Mr. Kirk's offices as a base of operations. And it is unknown if I had access to telephones, computers, etc. And so we're talking about a complaint that is just a continuation of really a politically divisive issue between Alaska Right to Life and Representative McCabe. And this committee and this process has been weaponized against Eastman and Kirka with respect to this fight that's going on between Representative McCabe and myself. I would also add that He said that more than half a day was spent in Kirka's office and almost a full day and part of an evening in Eastman's office. None of your records actually reflect that statement. So from Barrow, Mr. McCabe is accusing me of spending too much time in Kirka's office, too much time in Eastman's office, and apparently using them as bases of operations. And it is unknown. The reason that words apparently and it is unknown is because he wasn't even in the building when I was. Finally, in trying to hurry, I'm trying to parse through what am I going to share and what am I not going to share. I've spoken to people in my position, whether it be in a Right to Life group or a gun group or a liberty group or whatever it is, all across the country, people that do what I do in almost every state in the country. And in almost every state in the country, the Capitol is open and accessible, meaning people like me just drive to the Capitol, they do the work. And when the legislature's in session, people like me are in the Capitol nearly every day of every week that the legislature's in session. We don't have that freedom or that ability just due to the cost of traveling to the Capitol. And so to say that, you know, I traveled to the Capitol, I brought petitions to the Capitol, and then I had to wait for Representative Eastman and Kirka to be available for meetings with me, photographs with me, so on and so forth, given that we only had really, truly one day to accomplish what we were trying to accomplish, because Thursday was our work day, Friday was Good Friday, and nobody was going to be in the legislature. And then I'll wrap up with this. Yes, ma'am.
Final. I'm trying to be fair to everyone. Mr. Martin, we appreciate you coming in. We want to hear what you have to say. It's just I've got 9 people now showing up and other members, so I sure don't want to cut you off, but I have to cut you off, so how about wrap it up?
Yes, ma'am. So whether I waited on the wood bench outside of Representative Kirka's and Eastman's offices, or I waited on the wood bench or maybe on an office chair in their staff reception areas, either way, I'm sitting on government chairs and I'm waiting for opportunities to meet with the representatives. And if we're going to characterize that type of activity as an unlawful use of government resources and penalize Representatives Kirka and Eastman for that, I think we have bigger challenges here.
Fair enough. Thank you. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for your testimony. And before we go further, I think everyone has a right to know, both online and present. I think we take for granted the fact that most of our complaints are confidential, unless confidentiality has been waived. And I think it's important for everyone here to realize, and for the record, that Representative Kirka and Representative Eastman have both waived confidentiality. That was waived on May 4th of 2022. So that is the reason that we can talk about some of this. And again, we do appreciate the public and the public's involvement. Other people that are present in the audience that would like to speak that have signed in.
Chair Fancer, I just have one question.
Yes, ma'am. This is
Representative Hannon. Speaking to the issue of waived confidentiality, it is my understanding that the two members who the complaint were made against waived confidentiality, but have the complainants waived confidentiality, or are their names and complaints still confidential at this time and on the record?
Through the chair, I can answer that question. No, the only individuals in the complaints that have waived confidentiality are the members who have had the complaints filed against them and Mr. Martin by providing public testimony.
Okay. Follow up. So when Mr. Martin referred to elements of a complainant that may not be waived into the public record, should those be kept out of the record, or... I'm looking for some guidance, because that was my understanding. There's some parceling of who has not waived their confidentiality in consideration, or is the entirety of the complaint now in the public, a record for public comment?
Through the chair, if I may, and I believe that Ms. Anderson can also add to this, we've not confirmed anyone who is in the complaint that has not waived confidentiality. So members of the public are able to speak to the complaint how they see fit, as it's their right to do, but we have not confirmed or denied or provided any information about individuals who have not waived confidentiality.
So one follow-up. So Representative McCabe, who was referenced, he has waived confidentiality?
Allow me. He has not. But we have not said that that is actually the person that that filed the complaint either. So when Ms. Maddow speaks to, we have not confirmed or denied. He could stand up here and say whatever. We have not confirmed or denied that. Yes. I'm sorry.
It's not a court of law. Nevertheless, there's Mr. Martin has made allegations about the behavior of Vocal and otherwise of Representative Cade. And I'm uncomfortable hearing allegations unless they're specified as such in the notes of the meeting that this is what someone has said without opportunity for anyone spoken against to defend himself or herself.
If I may, to the chair, yeah, due process is an issue that has come up more than one time throughout this, and as you've stated rightly, Mr. McBeth, Member McBeth, this is not a court of law, and we do have a duty bound by statute and by our rules of procedure to keep confidentiality. However, in the public comment, members are able to speak their mind, but we are not confirming or denying any individual that is involved in the complaint that has not waived confidentiality.
Okay, moving on. We have Pamela Samish online. She is from Nenana. Ms. Samish, are you available?
Oh, thank you very much for taking the time to hear my testimony today. My name is Pamela Samish, and I live in Nenana, Alaska. I am asking that you would drop all of the complaints and accusations against Kirka and Eastman. Chris Kirka and David Eastman were elected by the people for many reasons, and one of those reasons were for the way they defend the children of our future generations. As a pro-life voting citizen of Alaska, they are representing me and the entire pro-life community. In accusing Kirka and Eastman, it is infringing on my rights as a voter and as a pro-life Alaskan. They are doing the job they are elected to do. I'm asking that you would drop this completely to ensure the continued freedom of representation for the people of the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Jason Floyd from Soldotna. Mr. Floyd?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you very much. I'm thankful in this season of thanks that this has been opened up to the public. I, too, am a voting constituent who supports the right to life. And I, too, as Mr. Martin had said, belong to a number of associations that travel to Juneau on my behalf because I cannot do so. I'm a business owner. I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. And I pay my taxes. I love this country. And I love what this country stands for. And I'm thankful that this committee is meeting because it provides the opportunity to answer questions, but not only answer questions, but to ask them as well. I believe that the allegations against Mr. Kirka and Mr. Eastman are fictitious and that they are mean-spirited, and the word that I'm looking for would be inaccurate, false. I used to be a social worker, and when you make false allegations, there's actually laws against false allegations. And when people, regardless of whether or not they are behind the veil of anonymity or not, make a false allegation, they should be held to account. Whoever made this allegation obviously has not read the Alaska Constitution, or if they have, does not care about Articles 2, 4, and 5. Which are very clear about the role of government and the role of the people and the people's access to its government. And the fact that Mr. Martin may or may not have had access to an office on my behalf to get the ear of one of the few great champions in the Capitol who stands for the things that I believe in isn't the real question that should be asked here in light of those constitutional articles. But what should rather be asked is who made those allegations. And were they false? Were they accurate? And if they were false, what kind of investigation needs to be done to correct this behavior so that we do not see the weaponization of the institutions that I believe in very strongly? So I would ask that upon conclusion of this hearing, that the committee take up the very important follow-up question of, should we open an investigation into the complainant? Because obviously, Mr. Martin was acting on my behalf, doing what I'm allowed to do under the Constitution, and that is petition my government for redress of grievances and the formulation of laws and policies that reflect my values. Thank you very much for your time, and I hope that this this proceeding closes quickly and you come to a positive decision in favor of Mr. Kirka and Mr. Eastman.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Mike Alexander from Big Lake. Mr. Alexander, are you on the phone?
Yes, ma'am. Excuse me. Yes, I am. I would like to echo what everyone else has said. Basically, I don't understand. To me, this is a frivolous complaint. And when you go to Juneau, which I've done once or twice in my life, to testify or get something done down there, it's a major expense. So most of us don't. And we rely on people like Mr. Martin to do that. We rely on a lot of things. I wish I could rely on my representative, which happens to be Kevin McCabe, as much as I can on David Eastman and Chris Kirker to fight for the right to life, maybe get me a full permanent fund and other things. But this whole thing seems to be a rather problematic thing that Mr. Eastman seems to have for some reason he is a target for Mr. McCabe. I don't know what that's all about. I don't dislike whatever it is, but this is taking up valuable time for the state in the budget. And I think I want to echo the former caller saying, I would love to see this thrown out, and I would love to see you investigate whoever filed this complaint. Because I don't see that sitting in a representative's office for a while is a major concern. You're there. It's hard to do it. People do not have the finances to come down there and actually do that. And we depend on people like Mr. Martin to come down and represent our interests. And I wish that I didn't have to make this call this morning. I shouldn't have to make this call this morning because this is a frivolous lawsuit. It's a frivolous complaint. And it's a waste of your time. It's a waste of our time. But I hope you would find Mr. Kirka, Mr. Eastman, not guilty of any of this stuff or however you want to phrase it, but clear them of all this and then find out who made the complaint. And if you would do that, I think me and the folks at Big Lake would really appreciate it because it seems to be our representative doesn't seem to have anything to do except anything except chase Mr. Eastman around. So I would appreciate you all dropping this and finding out who's responsible again. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in. Next up, we have Mark Chryson, and if I trashed your name, I apologize in advance, representing himself and the Independence Party in Wasilla. Mr. How about just Mark? Forgive me.
Chryson.
Chryson, thank you.
Chryson or Mark.
Okay.
It will work, either or.
Thanks.
I'm here to listen to find out what the heck the state is doing and how much garbage are they trying to go in and produce. Both Chris and Dave have been my representatives for years. I've known David for a very long time, and I've known his kids are, I don't even know how old his kids are, but I've met him long before he had any kids. So, you know, I've known the man a very long time, I think since he first moved back into Alaska. Why are we wasting our time? Because it seems like if they don't like the way somebody votes, the first thing people in the political opposition do is file complaints against them, try to impeach them, and just do the garbage in general. This is a waste of time, a waste of state resources, and whoever it was that made the complaint, and I'm assuming it is the representative from Big Lake, but I am not sure. They need to be investigated and sanctioned accordingly. As far as the party goes, the Alaskan Independence Party, we both stand, we stand behind both David Eastman and Chris Kirka. They're not members of our party, but they are true Alaskans and represent the Alaskan people that they represent. They vote accordingly and do, and they do well over for their constituents. That is all.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up from Wasilla, Karen Lewis. Ms. Lewis, are you on the phone?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for hearing the public. It's important that that is done and not just legislators. My first question is, why does the person who made these allegations want to be anonymous? That smells. If he's going to make these allegations against two other representatives, he should at least have the intestinal fortitude to stand up and say who he is, I believe. I know Representative David Eastman fairly well, and I know Representative Christopher Kirka very well. And they are both, they both have exemplary characters and a profound belief in our Creator. And they both fight extremely hard to protect babies in the womb from being murdered. These are heroes. Now, I don't know about the person who is charging, you know, making these charges against these two representatives, but to me it seems like a vendetta. And there's no place for this in our legislature. I mean, it's in our legislature. It's hard enough for these people to go there and fight for righteousness and to have someone on the same side, you know, charge them with these frivolous charges. I can't believe it. It's like lawfare. You know, I expect this from Democrats, but not from a fellow Republican. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So I would ask that this be dismissed, too. I mean, it's ridiculous. It really is. I know this person that started this, he's trying to destroy the reputations of these representatives, but it will end up destroying his own. So please dismiss this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Next on the line, we have Mark Lack from Palmer.
Yes, this is Mark Lack from Palmer. And for me, the bigger issue is our ability to get down to our legislators during session and be able to make contact with them. It's damn near impossible because of geography and logistics, which you talked about earlier, having to get out of there and the trouble you have getting out of there. So for me, when you do go down there, you got to speak louder in person for your voice to be heard over the lobbyists. And because of geography and infrastructure, you may have to sit outside of a legislator's office because sometimes it's difficult to find a room down there. If I could afford it, I'd be camped out of my legislator's office, but I can't afford it because I've got issues that I want to address too. It seems that the rules that the state have are in favor of the lobbyists. And the state being run by lobbyists, not citizens, because lobbyists can't afford to be camped out down there. We have very limited access to our legislators in person during sessions. And like I said earlier, you address these logistics. And then lastly, as a citizen who goes to Juneau, which is no easy task, for their voice to be heard, called an unregistered lobbyist? I mean, if you're representing yourself or you're representing a group of people and you're not being paid, are you considered an unregistered lobbyist? I think that's an unfair accusation, too. But I do think it's a closed system down there, and who's ever making this complaint needs to have the guts to go ahead and say, I'm the one making the complaint and the accusations, but I do think this needs to be dropped. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Melanie Galat. From Palmer?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes. Melanie Glott from Palmer. So does this mean it will be more difficult for me to talk or work with representatives? I flew down to Juneau about 10 years ago to talk with legislators about issues concerning the disabled. I was there for a couple of days and was unable to talk to a single legislator, only their staff. Frankly, it was a waste of my time and effort. These kinds of situations keep arising, you're going to further inhibit my family's constitutional rights by limiting my ability to petition my government. I'm very troubled. This is anonymous, this complaint against Mr. Kirker and Mr. Eastman. Please drop the complaint, and that's all I have to say. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Next up, James Squires, I believe.
Good morning. My name is James Squires. I'm an Article 1, Section 2 Alaskan. I'm also the husband of Pamela Good, who used to be staff to Representative Eastman before she was fired by House leadership. It seems as if the spirit of the Salem witch trials are still walking the halls of Juneau with these complaints. I listened to a previous public testimony before this committee on November of 2022 by Mr. Pat Martin, where he said, based on my visits to the Capitol, it seems that either Representative McCabe or Senator Hughes or their staff members seem to have taken a very, very, very politically motivated stance against me, against a private citizen, against Alaska Right to Life, a simple pro-life activist group, and the representatives that we work with, end quote. I subsequently put out a meme on social media asking, did Republicans Representative McCabe or his staff file ethics complaints against Republicans Representative Eastman and Representative Kirka? Question mark. Senator Shelley Hughes quickly publicly denied filing the complaints. Alaskans can easily deduce with a reasonable amount of certainty that Representative McCabe is the one behind these complaints. I spoke with Mr. Martin about his public testimony on that date, and I am at this moment looking at a public document of the complaint with redaction after redaction throughout it. Taking a look at the redacted complaint, several things come to one's attention. This complaint was signed by the person filing the complaint on 4/25/22. This complaint is 1 year and 7 months old. That's a long time for this not to be resolved. There's been considerable defamation to various parties during this inordinately long process administered by this committee. Senator David Wilson came before this committee in public testimony on November of 2022, indicating that there was a problem with staff and that maybe they should be fired. The problem was apparently with the investigator, not the staff. And yet my wife has subsequently been fired by House leadership with no input by her previous boss, Representative David Eastman. The core of this complaint looks to be one paragraph and contains the phrase, he, referring to Pat Martin and his assistant, apparently used the offices. And it is unknown if he was allowed to use computers or telephones. Apparently, unknown? Is this all it takes for one person to baselessly weaponize this committee, to spend public funds to engage in what amounts to be a witch hunt? This complaint should have been dismissed with prejudice a long time ago, and the filer of the complaint disciplined for weaponizing this committee. I'm going to leave you with a couple of things. Article 12, Section 5 of the Alaska Constitution is the oath of office that all of you folks took to be sitting up there, where you're supposed to support and defend the Constitution. In Article 1, Section 6, assembly, petition, the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government shall never be abridged. So you need to think about where you stand on this issue. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you very much. Next up from Ninilchik, we have Waynette Coleman.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, perfectly. Thank you.
Hi, yes, my name is Waynette Coleman, and I do live in the Ninilchik area. And I am following that gentleman previously, absolutely agree with him 100%. This erroneous complaint from an individual or individuals is completely unjustified. And in so saying that, I wish and hope that the committee would come to their a quick decision in that it is such a fallacy and has no merit to it that they would drop it against these two gentlemen. I am completely in for our Constitution. I believe that we have every right to approach our elected officials, for we are the people and we are the ones that elect them. And so we have every right to come to them, whether it be their office, by phone, by text, by email. The fact that they are in Juneau and that that in itself is a crucial, terrible place for them to be for their constituents to get to them. So I encourage each of you to have the common sense, to have the practicality, and use the Constitution, the Alaska Constitution, and do the right thing. Drop this. If it means an investigation to those who have done this and presented this complaint, then that needs to be followed up. Otherwise, this needs to be dropped. It's completely ridiculous. It's completely erroneous. And we look forward to your decision, and I hope that it is quick, and I hope that it is practical. And I thank you for this time.
Thank you so much. Next up from Palmer, Richard Stoffel.
Yes, hello. I'm Richard Stoffel from Palmer, and I just cannot believe another frivolous action to take away the God-given constitutional freedoms of two wonderful representatives, David Eastman and Representative Kirka, that are champions to save the unborn's life. And Pat Martin bring the wonderful petition that I signed to the legislature. Just that action in itself is so constitutional and wonderful, representing me to save the baby's lives. It's just, I mean, stopping murder of that. And then, this, and of course, because they're so effective, David and Christopher and Pat, to save the baby's lives, that's why we have this frivolous thing trying to take away their God-given constitutional rights. And that's what they're, and they're doing the same thing to all of us. And they're trying to set a precedent. So, obviously, this was initiated by a bunch of, or one or two, or but the whole rhinos, the Republican, the name only, don't adhere to their the platform that the people make, and it's just, you know, and because David and Christopher have exposed them, so now they're just playing vindictive and doing one frivolous thing after another. That's just what they do to try to stop any effective legislature that's really representing us from doing good, good constitutional godly actions.
Thank you. Next in the queue is Michael Gerhart from Wasilla.
Yes, I'm requesting that they drop all ethics complaints against Mr. Kirka and David Eastman. I've known them for years. Also, I've met them several times. I've listened to them talk in Juneau on Gavel to Gavel. And these two men have more high morals than any other representatives we have in Juneau. They do not waver in their good moral standards. And I appreciate them being there. It's wrong what happens to good politicians, and it should stop, and I request that you drop all these ethics complaints. They're frivolous. And thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Andrew Elliott from Eagle River.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. My name is Andrew Elliott. I was a staffer in Juneau, worked for former Representative Kirka during his time as a representative. I wanted to call today because this complaint and the further proceedings after it are very concerning to me, because we all already know, as it's been spoken to many times already, that traveling to Juneau to petition the state government of Alaska is very difficult, because of geography and other related things. So we already know that it can be very discouraging for some people to petition their government, because they get persecuted because of it. They get discriminated against for and things like that. So the idea that a group or an individual like Mr. Martin cannot travel to Juneau and have conversations in a representatives or multiple representatives' offices without possibly getting himself or those representatives in trouble with frivolous and completely false ethics complaints like this is extremely concerning, and so I think it should be dropped. My encouragement to the committee would be to take a hard look at the facts. Obviously, the words apparently and unknown were used in the complaint. Obviously, if those words were used, the facts of the case were unknown. So I would encourage the committee to seek out the facts, and if they do that, they will find that these complaints, these ethics complaints, are false, no laws were broken, and that Mr. Martin, Mr. Kirk, and Mr. Eastman acted well within their rights as representatives and as a private citizen to petition the government. So I would encourage the committee to take a look at the facts and consider the broader implications that this will further discourage individuals who already have to go to great lengths to get to Juneau to address legislators. It will further discourage them from doing that. So thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for your time. Dixie Banner from Wasilla is up next.
Yes, my name is Dixie Banner. Both Kirka and David Eastman has been my representatives for the Valley. I have advocated with especially David Eastman for the last 10 years in regards to parental rights and reform of the family court system, because Alaska has poor family values. They spend more time on spending money on social issues of crime because they fail to instill the father back into the equation. The game that being presented is like January 6th in Washington. The fact is we're, our court system, our law system, and our state are weaponized against us. There's a two-tier justice system, and the legislators, they can do as they please, but they're never reprimanded for their behavior. Professional choices and decisions are not based on, they're based on who's paying them in regards to their lobbyists. Bottom line is, we need Juneau to be pushed back, and also we need to move the capital. This this concept of weaponizing somebody's reputation based on somebody didn't like somebody, that's wrong, totally wrong, unethical. And the bottom line is, this is just one more witch hunt. And the thing is, there's definitely going to be term limits, and especially I've talked to Eastman. Eastman won't. And Volkirk on regards to parental reform, and the thing is nobody wants to do it because they're a fear of the caucus. The caucus is wrong as well. So I suggest, highly suggest, 2024, there's going to be some term limits. And this concept of not initiating at the legislative level can initiate term limits, i.e. the lieutenant governor chose not to, is totally wrong. And the bottom line is, the government belongs to the people, not to a selected few. Have a great day.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up from Anchorage, Archibald Campbell.
Hello, this is Archibald Campbell. I'm a resident of Anchorage. Thank you for giving me time to speak. I'm an educator of adults and children for over 30 years, and most recently at Motivated Homeschool Classes, I've launched something that I believed was really needed, and I've called the class Civics for Kids. Well, as you can imagine, we're going to talk about the principles of the Great Republic, an unequaled experiment on the earth. One of its hallmarks is representative government. So as I'm teaching these young children, which are often scared of their shadows, as we talk about public speaking and overcoming those fears, we talk about application. One great application at cost to themselves or their parents, time and energy, is to go to the Capitol and to meet with their representatives, especially the ones of which they are a constituent. but also perhaps those who hold opposing views, to try and use influence, logic, reasoning to sit in their offices of the ones they agree with and the ones they don't, to try and convince them with powerful words, to appeal to their humanity, to give research and represent ideas well where change is needed. But now I have to talk to them about additional ideas, like the very fabric of the Republic is being thwarted because they have to think twice about bringing ideas in a representative republic to talk to their representatives or others about ideas. This is crazy. If we want to represent other forms of government, like perhaps socialism, fascism, communism, we would pursue this route. We would limit the ability of citizens to go and exercise their right in a representative republic. So, as you can guess, I'm strongly encouraging you to stop wasting any more time, drop this frivolous accusation, and move on to more important things. I hope that I can continue teaching these classes and challenge the students to go to sacrifice and to participate in their form of government. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up from Palmer, Jacqueline Goforth.
Yes, thank you. You can hear me?
I can perfectly. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. My name is Jacqueline Goforth. I am a staunch supporter of the Constitution. I believe that it was written for the people, by the people. I believe that I have the right to travel to Juneau and speak with my representative for no matter how long it takes. I believe I have the right to talk to other representatives while I'm down there. I believe that every person in this state has the right to do that without having to worry about an ethics complaint, a frivolous ethics complaint filed on them in order to make them stifle their voice and not go down there. This is one of the most outrageous and egregious actions taken against these two gentlemen so far. I have met both of them. I have nothing but awe and amazement at their ethics and their integrity. This is a hit piece. It is another part of the witch hunt, and I am totally against my tax dollars going toward this kind of activity when we should be doing other things, like actually running the state and working on real problems. Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you for your testimony. Next, from Delta, Pam Goad. Might be good.
Thank you. My name is Pam Goad, and I'm from the Delta Anna area. I'm calling to, and thank you, committee. I'm calling to share with you what I've experienced in the targeting of Representative David Eastman while I worked for him in the Capitol. I worked for him for 2001 and 2003. And as far as the oath of office goes, in my opinion, there is no office that upholds the oath of office more seriously and their duties than that office, and I will include myself, which is probably why I was hired. When I was in the Capitol in 2001, the doors were locked. So it was a totally different atmosphere. And then in 2022, they were opened again. I'm going to step back a little bit. Representative Eastman made sure when I was hired on that we upheld the principles and values and our oath of office for what we were hired to do and what he was elected to do by over 16,000 voters, or he represents over 18,000 voters. That was what we focused on all the time. In 2022, I noticed that there was a lot of people who probably weren't the most supportive of our office, but we weren't sent down there for that. We were sent down to represent the constituents. And in 2022, I started locking my door. And the reason I did that was because two doors down, there was a representative that I deemed to be vindictive, unstable, and had a temperament to them that I did not feel comfortable in. And I was the first one in there in 2021, and I was often the last one to leave the building. So I got to I was there a lot of times by myself. The door was never locked. Then I started locking it, and you could even ask my coworker. And then in 2022, there was I was interviewed no less than three times for ethics complaints, which was held no weight whatsoever. And there was a misunderstanding, and Representative Wilson did comment at the ethics complaint, and nobody knew what he was talking about. And as soon as they came to us and we found out that there was a miscommunication, we got on it immediately. And it was supposed to be confidential. For whatever we speak to is supposed to be confidential. But the treatment I received in the airport going to Juneau and getting ready to serve in 2023 was not what I received in the airport. So it was a very uncomfortable situation. And I will tell you, when it comes to extreme unethical actions, I have never experienced anything more than that in February when I received, and it must have been as punishment, I don't know why, I received on January 20th my letter that basically said when my last day was going to be. My boss, Representative Eastman, knew nothing about it. In fact, he was CC'd, and I was given 5 days. And that continued on. So we packed our gear, and what we came to realize,
Ms.
and
Good,
I don't know.
You've got to wrap it up. We are past 3 minutes. If you could summarize in 30 seconds, please.
Yes, and thank you for that. Representative Eastman was down to one staff, and so was Representative Stutz. And they received it via hand-delivered. It wasn't emailed. And in my opinion, there's a lot of constituents out there that probably are not aware of that. Over 36,000 constituents are being not represented. And it was beyond unethical what the legislature is doing. In my opinion, it was corrupt. And right now, that continues today with him only having a part-time staff to run his office right now during that. All that is something that I've experienced personally. I've seen it happen. I find it corrupt. I find it unethical. And I challenge, actually, I ask the committee right here before us, I really ask you, I know it may not be in the Ethics Act because I've read it, but these are the types of things that Alaskans are asking you to do. When they go down there.
Thank you. Can you wrap it up? Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I know all of us have things that we could be doing, and we do appreciate your testimony. Thank you. I apologize for cutting you off, but I would be remiss if I did not give Representative Eastman and Representative Kirka the opportunity to speak, and I want to make sure that they have plenty of time. Before we go forward, if you will allow me two things that I have heard repeatedly come up, is one of confidentiality and one of timeliness. If I may read to you, on the front of a complaint, it says, pursuant to AS 2460-170, the person filing a complaint shall keep confidential the fact that a complaint has been filed, as well as the contents of the complaint. Our complaints are confidential until they are further and fully investigated, and that does allow people protection. Now, that said, can anybody file a complaint about anything? These complaints are also notarized. So the answer to that is no. But I do want to make sure that the public is aware that our complaints and the complaint process is, at this stage, confidential. It will probably remain that way, and I think that that is very important as a public member on this committee. Likewise, timeliness. Timeliness. The administrator of our committee, Jerry Anderson, dropped dead in July. Tragically, it was not expected, certainly not planned. So I do apologize on behalf of the committee for that. I do not think that there was much we could do. So to the extent that people are troubled with how long this has taken, we take responsibility for that. Not quite sure that there was an easy fix. With that being said, at this stage, like I said earlier,
Representative Kirka and Representative Eastman have waived confidentiality. The complainant, as was noted earlier, has not. But we would like to give former Representative Kirka and Joe Miller, who is now the attorney. Joe Miller was the attorney for both subjects. He emailed the committee on Friday, November 24th. He was notified on Monday, November 27th, of the procedures and provided a copy of the public packet for everyone. So he is on board. I believe, Ms. Maddow, do you have something you want to add to that? Am I missing something? Because I easily could.
Okay, I just think, through the chair, if I may, I think it's, if we want to go ahead and close public comment before moving on to comments.
Thank you. We do need to close public comment. And now at this point, is there anybody else online that we missed or anybody in the audience that we missed for public comment before we move on to allow Representative Kirka and or Joe Miller and Representative Eastman to speak? Is there anyone that I've missed that signed up late, that walked in? Okay. Thank you. All right. At this point, I would like to ask former Representative Kirka and or Joe Miller if they would like to speak, keeping in mind that we have that hard stop at 11:15. Representative Kirka, are you there?
This is Joe Miller, and I'll defer to my clients as to whether they want to address the committee first or whether they want to listen to my comments. I want to make sure that both of them have sufficient time to express what they want to express to the subcommittee. Representative Kirka, do you want to wait for me, or do you want to go ahead and...
I think we prefer if you went first.
You know, one of the... Representative Eastman, is that your perspective as well?
If I may, Representative Eastman, could you come up here so we could hear you? I just want to make sure the that's fine is on the record so we can hear you say that's fine.
Certainly, I have no objection.
I guess one of the first things that, and I'm kind of late in the game on this, but one of the first things I wanted to talk about was the confidentiality provisions. And I know that a lot of what the committee does is established by statute and some, of course, by your own procedures that derive from statute. But the confidentiality provision that is present in the statute that you referred to, it appears to be confidentiality that's afforded to the target of the complaint as opposed to the complainants themselves. And the reason why it's important, I think, both to Representative Kirka and Representative Eastman, is that, of course, in the packets that they've received, and I'm not going to infringe on the, obviously, what the direction of the committee is regarding confidentiality, even though I have a different legal perspective. But it is very difficult, obviously, for them to confront witnesses against them, and not just the complainant, but, of course, also those that have provided information to the committee in written form. You know, one of the bedrocks, and, of course, criminal prosecutions, and I'm very aware that there isn't a perfect analog between what the committee is doing and what is done in criminal courts, but you obviously have the opportunity to confront witnesses against you. There's a confrontational clause in the Constitution, shared both by the United States and state constitutions, that allow that so that you can actually determine who's offering evidence against you. And also so you can determine whether or not it's true, investigate and find whether or not there's issues with credibility. And, of course, that's not possible when you've got this blanket confidentiality prohibition, which does not appear to be a privilege that's held by anyone other than the complainant. 24-6170C provides that a proceeding conducted under the subsection and documents that are part of a proceeding and a dismissal under the subsection are confidential as provided in L of the section unless the subject of the complaint waives confidentiality as provided in that subsection, which I believe both Representative Eastman and Representative Kirk have done. You know, there's also, of course, due process concerns, too. I'm not going to belabor that. I recognize that the committee has broad discretion in what it does. I also recognize that there have been a couple of cases that have gone to the courts for review. And I'm going to talk just very briefly about jurisdictional issues as it relates to Representative Kirk. But let me finish on this confidentiality issue and just offer some broader sweeps on this as well. I mean, one of the reasons I think that we have the Confrontation Clause in the Constitution is because of this idea that came into the American experience from kind of the tyrannical system in which they lived. Justice Brandeis said that publicity is justly commended as a remedy for social and industrial diseases. Sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants, electric light the most efficient policeman. More recently in our history, JFK said, quote, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are as a people inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. And that really is the American experience, right? I mean, we pride ourselves as having democratic principles, and we want to make sure that the people can see and hear what's going on. And what more import would be attached to, you know, the very attack on a foundation of the democratic process, and that is trying to take sanction against one that has been elected by their constituents. And in the case of both Representative Eastman and Kirka, they've been elected by wide margins. I mean, Eastman in this last election, even in ranked choice voting, had over 50% of the vote. And Representative Kirka, or former Representative Kirka, I think got close to 70 in his vote. And of course, as I think many on this committee are probably aware, Representative Eastman also suffered the indignity of having to defend against litigation this last year during his election, which was also an attempt to basically impact his ability to represent those who elected him. And that's effectively what's happening here, too. I understand that the Ethics Committee has responsibilities to ensure that the members comply with the ethics codes that are before them. But the reality is that every time that you take action, even by public notice and by press releases, it has an impact on the ability of the legislators that are targeted to do the business of the people, just as this whole proceeding has, because it takes time. And obviously this has big import, and not just public import or public implications, but of course also the sanctions of the committee can apply. And so I think confidence in institutions are another aspect of this that the committee needs to consider. I think practically there are some additional considerations beyond undercutting confidence in institutions. We heard from a number of people in public comment today about how they like to travel or would like to travel to Juneau. It's difficult. It's expensive. And this is a now generational issue in Alaska about the capital being in Juneau and the difficulty of legislator access. I mean, I honestly believe, I think the legislature likes the remoteness because it allows them to not have the public eye on them. And the reality is, apart from my own personal view on this, is that when you say that a person that comes to Juneau to have impact on the public process may end up causing sanction to be applied to those legislators whose office that person visits, that obviously is going to chill public contact. Now, I don't think it's in question, and we'll talk more about the facts of the complaint here in a minute. I don't think it's in question. Pat Martin, not a paid lobbyist, right? I mean, he's Joe Q citizen, there on his own dime, trying to influence the process. And yet we're saying that because he, I guess, camped out, or according to the complaint, had his base, operating base, in a legislator's, well, a couple legislators' offices, that this was somehow a violation of ethics. I can assure you that any aggressive complainant can drive a truck through on that. I mean, next thing you know, half the legislature is up on complaints, and probably justly so for other reasons, but not certainly for having somebody in their office spending an inordinate amount of time being there more than perhaps other constituents. That's just simply not, I think, the road that the committee wants to go down. Let's talk about the actual language of the complaint itself. Does the complaint state that the legislator in question violated the law? No, really it does not. Neither complaint identifies any direct action by either Mr. Kirka or Representative Eastman that is a violation of law, a violation of ethics. The best that the complaint has, and again, we're taking the facts as true at this point. I'm not going to get to the facts until a bit later. But he says they were present at the time effectively arguing guilt by association. Now, I can tell you, because I've reviewed complaints for probable cause in the past, and I've made decisions on that, I will tell you that I would never accept the complaint as falling, because it fails to state probable cause. Guilt by association doesn't do it. Even if they were present at the time, without some actual action or something that allows them to have been in charge of the supposed ethic violation, it would not pass muster on probable cause. There are a number of other things that are also problematic with complaint. The terms base of operating, for example, very undefined, amorphous, ambiguous. Again, it gets into this area of, okay, so are we now going to say that, you know, 5 minutes is okay, but an hour isn't, or maybe an hour is okay, but 7 or 8 hours is not? You know, you've got somebody that traveled by car, then ferry, or by flight, and spent hundreds of dollars, going to be there for a couple of days. Are legislators going to allow that person more leeway than somebody that perhaps lives in Juneau? I mean, again, I think finding even probable cause on this complaint under those facts spells for a disaster in the future, because I dare say that many, if not most, legislators are going to somehow fall askance of a standard that suggests that hours in the office translates into this person is conducting a base of operations or operating. And, you know, the petitions. I try to shy away from anything other than the language right now of the complaint. But even if we're going to say that the petitions in question somehow make things different, that because somebody carries a bag in or brings a dolly in, or, you know, has a suitcase, or, you know, because they're flying out that day has two suitcases, does that suddenly trigger that, uh-oh, we're using this office for personal purposes or for something untoward or something that violates ethics? I don't think that is a precedence that the committee wants to endorse, and I think it's going to make your workload exponentially higher in the future, assuming that there are other complaints that are similarly motivated to the complaint in this case. There are some other issues, of course, that undercut credibility that we'll talk about when we get to the actual facts, as I understand them, based upon the investigations and the communications I've had with witnesses. I think all information that I'm going to talk about here in a minute is before the committee. But I would just reemphasize, as far as the language of the complaint goes, in addition everything I just described, there is no statement of personal observation, none. And that's fatal to a complaint on probable cause. And again, probable cause is probable cause. I had a discussion with the chair and staff yesterday, and I understand that there's concern that, you know, I may be looking at this from the context of a lawyer. I am. In the sense that I look at the law and I try to interpret and apply the law, but I can tell you the probable cause, more likely than not, is what the statute says with respect to your application of probable cause, is not supported by the lack of personal observation. And here there is no personal observation alleged. Let's next talk about the statutes, and I think specifically the statute that's alleged by the complaint is AS 246030A. That's what the complaint has alleged has been violated. Looks like the committee also added to that AS 246010-2. I think that's a piggyback onto 30A. But let's look at 30A for a minute. It states that a legislator or employee may not use public time, facility, equipment, services, or other government asset or resources for a non-legislative purpose, for involvement in or support of or opposition to partisan political activity, or for the private benefit of either legislator, legislative employee, or other person. This paragraph does not prohibit, and this is the important aspects of this. There are a number of exceptions to that general statement. And I think the first may be the most important. Even accepting as true the allegations of the complaint, even assuming that we have personal observation, A provides an exception that limited use of state property and resources for personal purposes if the use does not interfere with the performance of public duties and either the cost or value related to the use is nominal or the legislator or legislative employee reimburses the state for the cost of the use. Well, first, I mean, there's no allegation that there's any interference whatsoever with the performance of public duties. And there is no allegation that any cost was incurred, that there was any real value. And in fact, I think that the committee can just read from the face of the complaint the nominal nature of this. Subsection D as in Delta is similar. I'm going to skip down. I know that the committee's time is limited and that you have time that you need to reserve for deliberation, so I'll try to abbreviate for that purpose by not reading the entire subsection. It states that the use does not interfere with the performance of public duties, and if there is no cost to the state for the use of the space and the equipment, the legislator can use his office or her office for non-legislative purposes. And then there's G, which actually does have direct relevancy to this particular case based upon the interview with Pat Martin, use by the legislator of photographs of that legislator. Pat Martin's interview reflected, and again, I know our interpretations of confidentiality are different under the statute, and I guess I should inquire with the chair right now if it's okay for me to refer to information within the investigator's narrative of the interview.
I would appreciate it, Mr. Miller, if you did not. If you could just refer to the complainant as the complainant, that would be most helpful.
Right. No, and I'm not talking about naming anybody. I'm just talking about the allegations that are, the interview by the investigator of the committee includes details of discussions with certain witnesses.
At this stage of the process, we are still in very early stages of this. And my very limited experience on the Ethics Committee is that we are still in discovery. I don't think it's necessary at this point to do that. I'm going to defer this to Ms. Anderson, Ms. Maddow, your thoughts.
Madam Chair, this is Joyce Anderson. I would say since the information that was released is public information, even though it's redacted, if Mr. Miller wants to refer to something in the testimony that was provided in the documents, I don't see any problem with that because this is the area where he would be referring to what we have provided to him.
Ms. Maddow?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have to agree. If it's public information, he may refer to public documents.
Mr. Miller, you have your...
Okay, so...
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's a confirmation. So just, I mean, as Pat Martin said in his comments, I mean, one of the reasons why he was at those offices for so long, and I understand you aren't adjudicating the facts at this point, it's just probable cause determination, but the collective, the aggregate of all of this does weigh into that decision. But was to take photographs, and if anyone is thinking that could somehow fall askance of ethics code, there is a specific exclusion under subsection G. But I think importantly, A and D both provide exceptions for personal use or non-legislative uses. If they're de minimis, it doesn't interfere with the performance of public duties. The cost or value is nominal. And I think, again, taking the allegation is true, that it falls squarely within those exceptions. And again, on a probable cause basis, the complaint should be rejected on that basis. But looking beyond the language of the complaint and looking at the facts, at least as it appears, are relatively, they should not be reasonably contested, I guess is the way I should describe it. One, the complaint was out of town when the complaint was written, and yet claimed, quote, a majority of the day and the evening and representatives Eastman's office was spent by Mr. Barton, and over half the day in Kirka's office by Mr. Barton. Of course, the next day was a holiday. I suppose that you could potentially try to reconcile those two things by saying, oh, we're talking about a two-day span, but even with that, without the ability of personal observation, factually, there just aren't reasonable facts that support this complaint. The allegations, and as Mr. Martin put it in his testimony or his comments, of being an unregistered lobbyist, I mean, again, not true and unsupported and, frankly, reflecting bias of the complainant. The statement of his assistant being with him, again, factually not reasonably in dispute that it was his juvenile daughter that accompanied him to go to the Capitol and see the legislators and experience what it was like to be there. You know, it's a matter of public record as to where Representative Kirka and Representative Eastman were on the date in question, at least on that day that they weren't on holiday, and that is by record of what was happening on the House floor and then subsequently what happened in committee. So again, I mean, these suggestions that there was these extensive periods of time that Mr. Martin was in the office, you know, with apparently the direction and the express approval of either of these legislators is difficult to fathom when they weren't actually even there by matter of public record. You know, the improper purpose, supposedly, when, you know, Mr. Martin, as he said by his own comments, and as everybody, I think, that has been to Juneau knows, could have sat anywhere in that building, in the Capitol building. They could have sat down the hall, could have sat on the wood bench, could have sat at a cafe, could have sat at another legislator's office, and in fact did. The testimony is that he did sit in Senator Hughes' office. I mean, there are just all sorts of other options that were there. It's not as if, you know, this was something that had to be done so that Mr. Martin could talk to his legislators or talk to those that he felt needed to hear about things that were important to Alaskans. The idea that Mr. Martin was even around much on the next day, the holiday, the 15th, again, is debunked by his interview. Again, no reasonable facts suggest that there was anything going on the next day. So again, you know, this allegation of a majority of the day in the evening in Eastman's office and over half the day in Kirka's office really has to be focused on the 14th. And that was a day, of course, that both legislators were actively involved on the floor, subsequently involved in committee. And of course, you can't even reconcile those two statements to the 14th. Because you can't be the majority of the day in one office and be over half the day in the other and then spend the evening in the other legislator's office. It just doesn't work. And you have to blend over to the 15th. But again, that goes to the ambiguity of the complaint. And again, you know, we're talking about looking at a complaint for just extreme scientific accuracy. That's not what's been being stated here. But there has to be personal observation. I mean, if you're going to put somebody through the process of retaining counsel, you know, upsetting a legislator's activities such that he can't or she can't represent their constituency effectively because they're sidelined by these type of things, then the committee's got to demand more from a complaint than these generalized statements not based on personal observation that have clear error in them, not to mention the fact that on the face don't meet probable cause. Especially when combined with the statutory exceptions. And I just want to close. I mean, you know, there are clearly some constitutional issues here, the due process and otherwise. And I promise I'd talk just briefly about Mr. Kirka's situation. Legislative immunity, which was addressed, I think, in both the cases that have gone to the courts that involved the committee. It clearly, I mean, it's a very broad privilege that the legislature enjoys. And I don't think any reasonable lawyer is going to contest that. But I think what you'll find is if challenged, I think it's likely going to end when it comes to someone that has served in the legislature and is no longer present there. Now, I recognize the statute provides for, you know, the continued investigation within a year, I guess, of a former member of the legislature. But that particular statute's not been challenged. And let's say that it does withstand judicial scrutiny. I think the idea that there would not be judicial oversight over this committee's action against the former legislature is a real, real far reach under any reasonable interpretation of legislative immunity. And I also think that the First Amendment issues that are clearly at play here, because this is without a doubt a clear chilling of the ability of constituents to interact with their legislators if this sticks. And I really, again, emphasize, I think the important part of this to help reduce that chilling is to cut it off now. But let's say this goes through the process. there is absolutely no doubt it's going to chill speech. And that's directly implicating the First Amendment under both the U.S. and state constitutions. And I do think that review would take place with regard to that. And I want to just do a final reminder. I mean, again, the United States, the state of Alaska, you know, we're built on the idea of discourse, right? There are unpopular beliefs out there. We have very vigorous campaigns in Alaska, quite didactic. We have polar opposites. It's a sign of a healthy democratic system when you have vigorous debate on all sides. Now, every once in a while, one side or the other, they get uncomfortable with it. They don't like the uncomfortable debate. They want it shut down. And sometimes they've got the power to do it, or they think they do. That's not the sign of a healthy democratic system when those type of efforts succeed. A bedrock principle underlying the First Amendment is that the government may not prohibit the expression of an idea simply because society finds the idea itself offensive or disagreeable. I don't claim that. That's another Supreme Court quote. And yet another one, one man's vulgarity is another man's lyric. Indeed, we think it is largely because governmental officials cannot make principal distinctions in that area that the Constitution leaves matters of taste and style so largely to the individual. Again, those are just broad swaths, okay? But we all understand, I think, because we're all part of this system, that speech is important. We should not do things to limit it, even though it might be uncomfortable to particular legislators. And Representative Eastman and former legislator Kirk's cases are not the vehicles that I think the committee wants to go down the road on that will end up restricting such speech. Thank you very much. I'm open to questions.
Thank you so much. Anybody on the committee have questions? What I would propose is, because we have only until 11:15, I think that people on the committee would like to hear from Representative Kirka and Representative Eastman before we have questions for Mr. Miller, the attorney. Does anyone have an opposition to that? Okay. Representative Kirka, are you online?
I am.
Would you like to address the committee, or did your attorney say everything that needed to be said?
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot that can be said. I'll try to keep it short and brief. When I received this complaint, I was stunned. I was shocked. I didn't. When we first hired our first attorney, who couldn't continue to represent us for other reasons. He went on to work for government. He laughed when he saw the complaint, because on its face, the thrust of the complaint is complaining about protected constitutional activity, protected personal activity. And I believe he wrote the committee a letter. You probably have it with you. I don't know if you had a chance to review it, and I wasn't sure if that was just ignored, and Mr. Miller certainly touched on some of those issues as well. But and there's a bunch of due process issues I want to address that I'm quite upset about. But I think the bigger issue here, the thrust of the issue, is that the complainant is upset with the message, with the petition being brought, with petitions being delivered to the Capitol. And if you look at this complaint, the thrust of the complaint is that I somehow aided him, which if I had aided him, Mr. Martin, in delivering his petitions, that would have been my job. Because it is a solemn right. If you look at a lot of case law when it comes to these issues, one of the most the things that the U.S. Supreme Court is the most zealous on is the freedom of speech issue, the freedom of assembly, the freedom to petition your government for redress of grievances. And that's exactly what Mr. Martin was doing. He actually came to my office at my request to meet with him about legislation, and by the time he had gotten to my office, he'd run out of petitions, delivering them elsewhere. But the idea that somehow I'm being unethical because I met with somebody that the other representative found repugnant, it's just outrageous. What am I supposed to do? Was I supposed to kick him out to the curb to have our meeting on the Capitol steps? I think you have some a statement from me from the interview. I met with Mr. Martin for, I'm not sure the exact amount of time. It was over an hour, but I checked with my staff, and their recollection was similar to mine, and that was that it was well under 2 hours, his total time in my entire office. And it's normal to have long meetings, short meetings. It's all over the map. Sometimes you have people waiting for you, and sometimes you have a meeting, you have to stop and go to a, do take care of some other legislative business and come back. He was in my office strictly for legislative purposes. But this idea that we're going to categorize somebody coming to my office and spending time there as me utilizing state resources for a private benefit, I would hate to think as a citizen now, or at some point in the future, if I got back in the legislature or in the past, if I had to tell people, hey, we got a clock, 15 minutes and you're out, otherwise you're going to be getting an ethics complaint. I mean, this is ludicrous. It's ludicrous. Am I supposed to do legislative business on the Capitol steps or down the street at the coffee shop with people coming to meet with me over pro-life issues? This is ridiculous. I have a question. Does the committee only investigate complaints made from people contact the legislator over pro-life issues, or are you also investigating legislators that are meeting with Planned Parenthood or have Planned Parenthood in their office? This is so outrageous. It's ridiculous. It needs to be dismissed on its face. On its face, it's absurd. And like I said, on its face, it's complaining about First Amendment protected activity. In terms of the due process stuff, I realize the committee, there's discussion about what category it falls in. Is it part of the judicial branch? Because so many members are appointed by the judicial branch. Is it under the legislative branch? Is it established in law? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The Constitution due process rights that I am guaranteed still apply. You're still obligated to allow us to have discovery. We're still obligated to see the evidence presented against us. We still have the right to cross-examine those who are accusing us and question their credibility. Because they weren't even in the building, weren't even in the city. And I'm quite upset that I'm still dealing with this issue. And that we're spending state resources on it. Because like I said, on its face, it's laughable. And I know you have limited time, I know Representative Eastman wants to speak, so I'll stop now. But I just, again, Article 1, Section 11, rights of the accused. I don't see where in this process that's been observed by the committee.
Thank you, Representative Kirka. Representative Eastman, your time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that you're trying to squeeze me in here. I think it may be clear, and if it's not, I want to state on the record, I think the committee has mistook how important this issue is to my constituents and others who called in. The implications of what has taken place over the last 17 months since this complaint was filed last May of 2022, and more time should have been, you know, put on the agenda to allow for some public comments and some of my own comments, for example, because it is that. And I will step aside the immediate decision that's going to be made on whether or not to dismiss the complaint. I hope and expect that the committee will dismiss the complaint, but that's not the greatest concern that I have. The greatest concern that I have is the impact this complaint has had on me, has had on my staff, my family, has had on my constituents. And these are not things that can be undone by simply dismissing a complaint. The complaint itself, it talks about things that other people did. It never says anything that I even did, and yet I'm the one that's before you now being accused of violating the Ethics Act. The only reference to me at all in the entire complaint is a statement that I was present at the time, which is impossible, and I could not have been. And yet someone went to the clerk and got her to notarize a statement under oath that I was there, when that person had no reason to believe or expect that I was there. In fact, The only reason that I think that's even included in the complaint is because the committee would not even have looked at the complaint if my name was not mentioned somewhere, because it's about me. And yet the public record, which is known to all, is that I was on the floor of the House for a four-hour session, and I was in an hour-long committee meeting during the day that this is supposed to all have happened, during which I was supposed to be present for, which is physically impossible. The statement that I want to read from the Ethics Act is a short paragraph, and it was a paragraph that we had to add after we made changes to the Ethics Act my freshman year. And the Ethics Act was turned on its head and was being used to prevent exactly the kind of interactions that we're talking about constituents meeting with their legislators and then being told, well, you can't have this kind of conversation with your legislator because it might violate the Ethics Act. And so we had to go in and we had to add specifically the section which says, a fair and open government requires that constituents have unencumbered access to legislators about issues important to the state under Article 1, Section 5 and 6, Constitution of the State of Alaska, which protect the right of a legislator and a constituent to meet. And the right of a person to petition the government in this chapter is not intended to restrict those rights. It's not. There is nothing in this chapter which is intended to restrict those rights, and yet these rights are being chilled, and they're being threatened. People who are exercising these rights are being threatened with investigations, myself having to hire an attorney. These are not small things. They have an impact. They impact the public, those few of my constituents who are able to come down to the Capitol, because of the hostility that some in the legislature have to some people coming down to the Capitol. I only received, signed petitions from one person last year, and that was Pat Martin with Last Right to Life. I wish I had received petitions from all sorts of groups, but I didn't. Juneau's a very far, away place for my constituents in the Matsue Valley. When he delivered those petitions, prior to even this, accusation, surfacing, he was accused. In fact, I got a message from Representative McCabe that he was, carrying a gun in the Capitol, an accusation against him. Security was called because someone said that he was carrying a gun in the Capitol, which was also a false statement, which also, it is a crime to try and provoke a confrontation with law enforcement by accusing someone of having a weapon when that's a false allegation. The statements here, like that allegation, are also either exaggerated or don't apply or are, in some cases, outright false statements, and they have consequences. And not the least of which is the committee's time spent investigating them, which also has a dollar sign attached to it. If someone had not gone before the clerk and used her time to swear out this statement, then I would not have had to deal with an investigation. My staff members would not have had to deal with an investigation. There would have been no public criticism of staff for not complying with the investigation, and hopefully my staff member who is fired would not have been fired. These are all things that should not have happened on the committee's watch, and I wish that the committee could go back and have taken a closer look at actually what is written in the allegation and dismissed it earlier in the process. Thank you.
Okay, we are at 11:06. Anyone on the committee, would you like to ask questions of Representative Eastman, Representative Kirka, or of Attorney Joe Miller? Yes, Jerry, Mr. McBeath.
Representative Eastman, thank you so much for your remarks. I had a question for you. I'm a political scientist, and so we look at legislatures differently than legislators look at them. And maybe our view is mistaken or immature or wrong. You are a representative of, or you receive petitions from the Right to Life group in Alaska, and you said you would welcome petitions from other groups, but other groups would probably not pick you out. But my question really is, when you represent groups, do you represent them all as constituents, or do you represent them, some of them as stakeholders and others of them as constituents? Stakeholders meaning part of a much larger group of people with whom you agree or who agree with you, but do not live in your legislative district.
Sure. You know, I think any time we get a contact email or a phone call or a petition, it is from the person who sends it to us. But we also know that there's others that probably feel the same way and might have, you know, if they had more time or weren't distracted, might have also added their name to a petition or called us or emailed. So, I mean, in the sense that very few people actually do call or come to the Capitol, you do recognize that there are other people out there that probably share their views or partially share their views. As far as stakeholders, you know, the public record is there for the committee to review of special interest groups and donation to campaigns. Last I checked, I think I was the only candidate not to have money from a special interest group on my campaign. But I know it's common. And so if I had gotten money from special interest groups, would that make me a representative of those groups? No, it wouldn't. And maybe that's why they don't give me money.
Thank you. And then a follow-up question, because you expressed that you were wounded by the inability of the committee to act quickly, and both the chair and our new administrator and the interim administrator all apologized profusely on behalf of the committee.
Thank you.
For not being able to act. And there was no way for us during that period of time. I know because I participated in some of these procedures of recruitment. But so that will not suffice as an explanation. We've apologized.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Chair Fancler. Representative Eastman, I want to, like Mr. Macbeth, I want to go to the question of timeliness, and I want to just ask you on the record, because according to the ethics complaint is filed, then there must be an investigation. And in 2022, the investigator attempted for a span of approximately 4 months to make contact with you and your staff and also former Representative Kirk's office and his staff, and did not receive a response. Can you, so that stretched out the timeline for the committee because there was not the ability to have any interviews done, to have any questions answered and material presented to the committee. Can you speak to why there was no response for a period starting in September of 2022 until January, until January of 23?
And I can't speak for Mr. Elliott or Mr. Moffitt or others in Representative Kirk's office, but I can speak for my staff. It was in November, at the November meeting of the Ethics Committee, where I learned for the first time that the committee was trying to reach my staff or me, and I think they were waiting until they talked to my staff first to reach out to me, so they didn't attempt to contact me, and they were unsuccessful. And that was news to me, and that was news to my staff. The committee hadn't sent us any emails. We had no voicemail messages that we were aware of from the committee or the investigator asking for us to do anything. After that note came out, I received a message from the Speaker of the House inquiring about it, and then discovered that the investigator had been leaving messages in Juneau when my staff all work in Wasilla, and we were unaware that there were any messages there or that we had missed them. And I wish that maybe an email or a text message or something had been sent so that we would be able to have quickly act on that. And when my staff was made aware of it, I believe they did quickly act on that.
Please.
In an attempt to avoid any future things, have you changed office procedures so that phone messages from the Juneau office are forwarded to your Wasilla office during interim or points of absence from the Juneau office?
No, but I appreciate the question. It turns out that there's a historic technical problem getting from messages from Juneau to forward accurately to the Wasilla office. I'm told that is something peculiar to the Wasilla office, if not any other LIOs. Has to do with the age of the telephone system they use at Wasilla. Myself, other legislators are aware of it and have made many complaints. I understand that some messages, even when you tell it to forward, just don't for whatever reason. And it's hard to predict which ones will forward and which ones won't. I've asked for the system to be upgraded. I don't know if that's happened yet, but I certainly would like that to happen.
Other questions in our remaining 2 minutes? Hearing none, I would like a motion to go into executive session, but before I do that, I would like to thank Representative Eastman, Representative Kirka, Mr. Miller, and all of you that have participated. Thank you for coming in, for taking part in this. Now, again, I would like a motion to go into executive session. Thank you. A motion from Mr. McBeath to go into executive session. Please keep in mind that attendance at executive session is limited to members of the committee, essential personnel, as determined by the committee. In cases of discussion, investigation, data gathering, interviews, deliberations, or decision-making on complaints prior to probable cause determination, neither the subject of the complaint nor any other legislator not on the appropriate subcommittee shall be allowed in executive session. We will be taking up complaints H22-01 and H22-02 in executive session in accordance with the rules of procedure of the committee. Both of these complainants have waived confidentiality filed by the respective subject of the complaint. We therefore offer the following summary. Representative Kirka and Representative Eastman, we already discussed that it's H2201. We have an investigative report, but we need that motion. So, we've got the motion. Is there any objection? I apologize.
Yes, I object to your mispronouncing my name.
I'm sorry. I apologize. We can do Santer, Fanter. You can trash my Macbeth, correct? Macbeth, I will try to get that for the record corrected, and I apologize, Jerry. All right. Jackie, could you secure the room? We would ask guests to leave, and we will move into executive session. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just if it's okay for essential staff to enter into executive session on the record.
Absolutely. Jackie, Joyce, any? Call this meeting. I would like to call this meeting back to order. It is 12:26 on November 29th. And Jackie, are we ready to start recording? Do we need to take roll call again? We do not. Okay. We are coming back out of executive session and would like to announce the decision of complaint H22-01 against former Representative Kirka. By a majority of the House subcommittee members, and announced decision H22-02 by Representative Eastman by a majority of the House committee members. The decision is to dismiss the complaint. Tamara will issue a draft regarding this. It is requested that the members of the committee review the complaint, and then we can release that to the public. Decisions requiring a public release will be transmitted in the fastest mode possible. A phone call to the subject of the complaint and the subject's representative or attorney will be done following the transmittal of the representative decision. The administrator will acknowledge the receipt of the public decision and order by the subject of the complaint or the subject's representative, Speaker of the House, the Senate President, and complainant prior to informing the media. Is there any other business at this time?
Only that I believe you said we should be reviewing the complaint. We should be reviewing the dismissal.
Yes, I apologize. We should be reviewing the draft of the dismissal that Tamara will be providing.
Yes.
And if we could all do that in a timely fashion, it would be much appreciated.
Within 4 months.
Yeah, or within 2 days, whichever comes first. I would like to entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion, so moved. We are adjourning. The time is 12:28. Thank you, everyone, especially those coming in from far away.